Yeah, I completely agree with you.
I have to disagree with you. Can I disagree with you with all my heart?
Ooh, that's a loaded question.
Whoa. Okay, so,
gosh, you know, it's interesting. No one's ever asked me this question before, and I'm saying this for the first time, and it's kind of fascinating.
So crazy, huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, am I totally screwed or what?
Yes!
Welcome to Portrait of a Business. I'm your host, Del Williams.
This is Del Williams, and I'm talking with Carly Young and Reese Spikerman. And today we want to talk about women and weight and how we get where we are in society's views and how women are thinking of themselves and what they're doing. So, ladies, let's start with Reese. Reese, I remember we had tweeted about this, and I don't remember what got me on a tangent about it, but something got me on a tangent about it, as always something does. I read something or spot something, and it just got me on a tangent. And you responded, and Carla responded, tell me what made you think about it? What made you respond in terms of women and weight and how we view ourselves?
You know, I can't remember if it was Carla who tweeted this or maybe she retweeted this, but someone somewhere was talking about the skaters at the Olympics, and I actually didn't watch the Olympics, but they were saying they're so skinny. I thought that was only in the realm of gymnasts. What's happening? And I thought it was really interesting, and I retweeted it. I know I wasn't the original person who talked about it, and I think Dalit got you on your wonderful tangent.
Yes, I do have one. I love those. But, yeah, bringing it into the Olympics and stuff, I mean, everybody today is talking about that. And, of course, I live in Los Angeles, and, I mean, where people have to actually have, you know, the land of, you know, be skinny or die, you know. And, I mean, where people actually have headshots in order to get hired as a waitress to serve food. I mean, that's,
oh my,
which is a problem. Yeah, they do. I was, like, appalled when I found that out. But they really do
I'm
that.
I'm appalled, too.
You know, Mrs. Obama, the president's wife, has been talking diligently about obesity in childhood and children and dealing with that and fighting that. But I'm not hearing the message of people dealing with obesity or with weight issues, the root causes, in adults at all. I'm hearing it at the kids, and I understand that if you start them young, that makes sense. But what we have is a society where you're expecting parents who are maybe underweight or overweight, who are then supposed to teach their children how to eat properly and,
right,
you know, exercise and so forth. And when you have the two extremes, where the average size woman today is a size 14, you know, our society has changed. I mean, what are you thinking on that?
Well, I'd like to jump in and share an observation that, you know, the vanity around weight has just gone out of control. And I don't know if you ladies have noticed this, but we used to have small, medium, and large, or we had, I believe, sizes, you know, size 7 was about, you know, what the average, you know, kind of considered a well-proportioned woman was. And now we have extra small and double extra small and 100, and it has to do with this whole vanity thing around weight, around body image, and, you know, they keep, I mean, I went with a friend, a gay guy friend of mine shopping, and he's like, well, what size are you? And I said, well, I don't know, because it depends on the store because the sizes are so messed up. And he's like, really? And
yeah.
As a man, just give your measurements, and then they bring you pants. But as
exactly.
Women, like, you know.
Right, you're 32, you're a 32.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. And yet for women, you know, there's this pressure that we all need to fit into a 00. And and I'm a petite person. And I'm a naturally petite person, and yet here I am, you know, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not a 00. And you get this perception that, you know, 00 is the new standard, and then if you actually look at the 00, you're like, wow, you know, somebody get that girl a snack. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. And you know, it's funny, if I think back to, you know, the voluptuous Marilyn Monroe. I mean, she would be sent off to, you know, fat camp by our standards today. And I mean, she was the height of, you know, sex appeal and beauty because she had curves. I mean, she had these beautiful curves on her body. And now we are just going for that, you know, that almost like that Kate Moss, like
pencil.
Yeah, heroin-induced thinness. And it, I mean, it's not healthy, your body. And it's very, very hard. I was talking with a friend of mine, Susie Sheena, who, she was 200 pounds, and, you know, she's an exercise physiologist, understands how to get her body back to, you know, a lower weight. And so she got herself down to a size 2, and she said, you know what, I realized that I didn't want to live like that. Being a size 2 was so much work. And so she's actually came up with this whole system of being fit enough, because it's ridiculous to try to be so fit that you're like this pencil.
Right.
I mean, the issues go on and on.
Yeah, what I'm seeing is there was an article on CNN the other day. You know the actress who played in Precious, the teenage girl, who played the teenage girl. She's not a teenager. And they were debating her career in Hollywood based on her weight. That pretty much they had said, okay, she's done, because even though she's talented, she's too fat to be in Hollywood, that talent doesn't count. Her weight counts. That she would never be the love interest or never be anything. She would always just be in supporting roles as the, you know, friend of or whatever, even though she was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, right.
Even though, you know, there's all these other things. And I'm, admittedly, she is overweight. Let's not be in denial. She is overweight. But in Hollywood, particularly, it seems like, you know, looks and weight outweigh talent. And there are a lot of people being sidelined because of it and bringing it to people that do speaking. I was at a conference last year where the speaker said, and he was some kind of strategist or whatever, said that a woman who was overweight, so forth, that when she lost 50 pounds, her speaking gigs increased. Has that moved on to the speaking stage? Are we, I mean, is our society really that vain that they would just cast aside people that have the knowledge that they need, the talent that they want to see or whatever, because of their weight?
That is a great question. I think, though, Del, that on one hand, there's a large segment of society that is, they're sort of feeding into a market that does want to see really beautiful, thin people, either on
but
TV
who is
or at
that market? Is it men? Is it women? Because there's always been that debate. Is it men? Is it women? Women who want to see other women skinny?
I don't think it's everyone. And I do think that there is a significant backlash against that ideal going on right now. I was recently reading a magazine about this, and two interesting things. One is that in the fashion world, a lot of designers are beginning to take their cue from the quote-unquote everyday woman, and it's I think, in a way, it's being propelled by social media and the way that communities and crowds are sort of driving now the direction of media. But the other thing is that I thought was really interesting is they are now putting some fashion shows live streaming on the internet. And some designers are really upset about this because they think what's going to happen is fashion is going to become a consumer driven. If we are bringing, for example, in the fashion industry, it more to the common person, I think what we're going to see more and more is that the everyday person starts to drive what's happening on a bigger scale in terms of the media, Hollywood, the fashion industry. And I think a lot of us are fed up. We're tired of seeing the stark difference between actresses on, say, Gossip Girl versus when I used to watch the show Beverly Hills 90210 back in the day. The differences are pitiful in both shows. was just astonishing, and I'm mad. I'm tired of it.
I agree. I remember on Ally McBeal, they were doing an interview one time. Calista Flockhart is naturally skinny. She just is. The other stars felt that they had to keep losing weight to try to match her weight and to try to match her look because they said they felt pressured, and maybe it was more of an inside thing, that they felt pressured to be skinny and to be thin and so forth. And some of them got underweight, and fortunately they had supporting people around them who were just like, cut it out. Unfortunately, there is that peer pressure in some senses, don't you think, where people are just make fun of fat people or people they consider fat and who are not fat. Or, you know, when a girl is a size zero and they tell her you have to go lose weight to be whatever and stuff, I mean, there's a problem.
How much more weight can she lose if she's a size zero? Where is it going to go?
Exactly, exactly. I think they want them in practically children's sizes and stuff. But, you know, it's the backlash, like you said, in Italy, I remember a couple of years ago, they started a law, basically, that wouldn't allow models under a certain weight to even be in the shows because they were getting such backlash. The rest of the fashion world was just like, oh, how appalling, you know, but we like this and so forth. And now they're kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, it makes sense. Because now people like Tyra Banks will probably not be accepted as a model now and stuff, which is insane because she's thin, but she has curves.
Beautiful woman, yeah.
You know, she's thin, but she has curves. But someone like that would not. Or when Kathy Ireland, when she said, you know, she had gained 25 pounds and gained a little muffin, you know, on her tummy, the backlash she got from that the people wanted this skinny, skinny woman. They wanted her to be the woman she was when she was in her 20s, you know. So, and they were like, oh, well, are you going to go put on a bathing suit, you know, and put on your bikini or whatever and show the world that you've lost this weight or whatever. And she's like, no, you know. And one of the things that she said was nobody asked her about her health. She said they were just worried about her weight. Nobody asked her about her health. You know, how are you? You know,
right.
And that they just were concerned at how she looked. And what you have is a bunch of teenagers and young girls who are starving themselves, throwing up their food, doing whatever in this effort to meet this goal that's almost unrealistic. And that nobody, and everybody seems to say, oh, well, you know, people should be natural and people should be this, but then they perpetuate stereotypes of how people should be and how they should look and stuff. So how do you deal with that conundrum that where, you know, you want people to be healthy, but you want them to be healthy, not, you know, the standard of, okay, if you're not a size zero, then you're not healthy.
Well, Del, I can tell you, as a parent, this is a big concern for me. I have a 5-year-old daughter, and you know, I have to say, one of my relatives, I won't name which one, you know, she was 2 years old, and 2 year olds naturally have that kind of toddler pot belly. I mean, that's the shape of toddlers,
mm-hmm.
and this relative looked at my daughter and said, well, you know, when is she gonna thin out? When is she gonna lose? He basically called my daughter fat, and I'm like, she's a baby. She's supposed to be fat. That's how you know. That's how babies are. That's how they have to be because you know, from a physiological perspective, that's how they actually can main. They need to maintain enough body weight that they can, you know, stay asleep at night because, I mean, when they're really little, you're up every 2 hours because they just don't have enough ability to sustain themselves calorie-wise to stay asleep all night. And I was like, wow, really? We're gonna start looking at children like that? And I was quite appalled, but it concerns me because, you know, how do I raise a child and help her have a healthy body image? And, I mean, you know, you don't know what her body type is going to be. And, you know, there is a possibility that she could grow up and be, you know, a size 14. And yet, you know, I know that she would be getting a lot of pressure and, you know, all of these other images that would, you know, take away from her self-esteem because, I mean, she's smart, she's funny, but if she's not thin, I you know, this is just such a fear. You know, how do you as a parent battle that? You know, because you're the one voice that says, honey, you're great no matter what size you are. And then the rest of the world is bombarding our kids with these images. And, Del, you were talking about these kids that are making themselves throw up or, you know, taking laxatives. And I know from, you know, my youth that I had a very good friend who did that. She took laxatives chronically to stay thin, and that causes permanent damage. That causes permanent damage in your body. And I mean,
for life, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like she, you know, not to get too graphic and detailed, but I mean, it totally messes up your bowel function such that she's on a constant regimen of, you know, fiber and fiber supplements in order to even be able to go to the bathroom. I mean, that is it. She's just messed up her system from that abuse of laxatives.
Exactly.
That's scary.
I know, it's very scary. It's scary from the standpoint that what I would like to know is the root. I mean, everybody, you know, it seems to be, I don't know if it's just in our generation that it has been a real big thing, or if it's just always been that way. I mean, I listen to a lot of old-time radio and old-time TV, and it doesn't seem to be a factor. And it wasn't a factor back then. But now it is a factor. And I don't know if it's because we are getting larger as a society or just somebody just decided everybody needs to be this way and nobody can really narrow down who it is, you know. And because some things always just start with just one person and it becomes a thing. Like I was reading once about how, you know, how in the old days when you drank coffee or tea, you stuck out your pinky? Does anybody, well, you don't do it now, but in the old days they did. And the root of that was a very high society woman who had basically arthritis in her finger and couldn't bend it, and everybody thought it was manners and that it was the proper way to do it. And really it was just because she couldn't bend that finger. But she was such high prominence and so forth that people just took it as, oh, that's the way you're supposed to do it. You know what I mean? it had nothing to do with it. It was just, you know, it was just a fluke, and people just picked up just because of who she was, you know.
That's incredible.
And, I know, and it's just like, okay, so for years everybody's been doing that, and you have no reason to. You know? So, but the same holds true, I think, for this weight. I bet if there was somebody who could just really just narrow it down, that it was one person who was thin, and needed to, you know, and they had enough leverage, enough notoriety that it just made everybody think, okay, well, that's the ideal. I'm not sure.
Well, Dad, you know what? I think that, I mean, our view of beauty and that is constantly changing. You think about in different cultures, you know, having small feet is mm-hmm. value. Or it used to be, you know, back in the, you know, the Middle Ages or whenever, that being kings would want to have, you know, wives who were bigger. That being big and voluptuous, you know, it showed that you had enough wealth that you had plenty to eat. And mm-hmm. and so somebody who was thin, they would be like, oh my gosh, you must be poor because you're starving. And now we've gone for that complete flip-flop. And you can see, you know, culturally there have been these flip-flops. Like it used to be that the image of beauty was to be pale because it would denote that you didn't have to be out in the fields laboring. And then somehow, I can't remember where the flip-flop happened, they decided that, you know what, tanned was kind of appealing, and then everybody needed to be tanned. And now you have these people who are so tanned that they look orange. And,
yes.
You know, they go for the extreme. And I think, I mean, it's almost like it's this one-upsmanship. Like, you know, okay, well, tanned is now beautiful. Now everybody's got to go to the extreme of being tanned. You know,
mm-hmm.
being thin is beautiful. We need to go to the extreme. And we can never seem to really find, no one wants to be the average, even though mm-hmm. the average is what most of us are. Most of us are just average. We're the average tannedness. We're the average size. We're average. And yet everybody flocks and pays attention to the extraordinary.
Yeah, I agree with that. What is wrong with being average? That if the average is a 7, 8, or which now it's a 14, what's wrong with that? One of my things was, you know, I'm a plus size. And one of my things, my sticking point, and it bugs me to death, is, you know, where plus size women are forced to pay extra for the same dress that somebody else has. You know, so if it's a 16 or below, you know, you pay one price, and if it's above a 16, you pay a different price, or in some cases a 14, you know, just depending on who the, you know, person, who the manufacturer is. And it used to just drive me nuts, you know, on that, because I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know, if the average person is a size 14, then why are you charging me extra when you should be charging them extra, you know, for those little ones who, I mean, you basically have to keep making those model thingies and whatever to even find clothes to fit them. You know, it's just like, why are you doing this to me? And stuff. But, you know, they explained it to me, blah, 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 and I was just like, whatever. But, and I still don't do that.
What's really funny, though, Del, is that they don't actually give the zeros discounts for having a much smaller size. I mean,
exactly.
That
exactly.
Is so flawed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's an issue of more fabric, why isn't the size zero paying less?
Exactly. I mean, it would just stand to reason that, you know, that seems logical. I was, there are, you know, lots of views in terms of weight and stuff. And like we said, you know, Mrs. Obama has taken on childhood obesity. Well, where do you start as an adult? How do you get to the place where you're not letting your weight define you?
I think it's not an easy place to get to, but one of the techniques and strategies I use is I cut a lot of media out of my life, and it's a little hard to do that because I need to, in my work, keep on top of some trends and things, but, you know, I don't have TV, and I read a lot fewer of those celebrity rag magazines than I used to. And I think there is a distinct correlation between me cutting out those influences and how I am feeling about myself and my own skin. And honestly, I think some of it also just comes with being kind to yourself, and it takes time, right? I think you need to stop some of the negative voices in your head, and that does not happen overnight. It's something you have to work on. You know, it's not an easy thing.
True. And
Carla?
Yes, no, absolutely. I was trying not to talk too much, but you know, and again, I'm gonna bring it back to, you know, becoming a mom, and you, Del, used the example of Kathy Ireland, you know, having a bit of a muffin top. Well, I mean, she's got babies, and
right.
Babies changes your body, and you know, if you're breastfeeding, that changes the shape. And it just changes your boobs. It plain does. And, you know, you do develop the muffin top and, you know, this body that you had and you know, it's not there anymore. It's different. And you have to get to a place where you're okay with that. And, you know, I wanted to also point out when I was listening to you, Del, that a lot of these women who are really, really thin, they're not healthy, you know, and people start to look at, you know, thinness as being healthy, but yet you could be really thin and be completely out of shape, have a higher body fat index, because you can actually have fat within your muscle, and yet we use that, and I think health is really important, and health is important as an adult, and so, you know, yeah, we need to cut out these negative influences. I love your idea, Reese, of cutting out all of these, you know, outside influences to try to do that, but yeah, you got to be comfortable, because, I mean, you know, again, to go back to the example of having babies, it changes your body, and other than, you know, starting to get plastic surgery, you know, to lift your boobs back up there and, you know, nip this and tuck that, you know, it's not coming back the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that seems to be a big thing in Hollywood, too, where people have a baby 6 weeks before, and they come back, and they're as thin as they were. And
yeah,
just like,
they love your
but, I mean, but they do, you know, they're doing 5 hours worth of exercise a day. Well, who has that kind of time? You know, the average person doesn't have 5 hours a day and a personal trainer to do that, you know? I mean, you know what I mean? So it's almost a unrealistic view that, oh, okay, see, this is how your body's going to be after you do, after you have your baby. Within 6 weeks, you should be totally back to size zero. You know, you're just like,
no.
Not the case. That is not the case. I mean, I had, and the baby, the pregnancy books prepare you for this. They said, hey, when you come out of the hospital, it's not like baby comes out and your body shrinks back down. It, you know, it took 6 months where I didn't, you know, where I didn't look pregnant anymore. And I avoided the camera because I just, you know, you just, you're not feeling comfortable with your own body. And you know, you're thinking, oh, wow, well, this supermodel came back and she was, you know, 6 weeks later wearing this size 2 dress. You know, what's wrong with me? You know, I still look like I'm pregnant. And that's a hard thing to deal with, especially when you're full of hormones.
Well, see, I think the thing of it is the stage is the media does not really give the realistic portrayal of, okay, well, okay, these actors are size 0 or size 2 and whatever, but this is what they do to get there. And
right.
They don't tell them they're spending 5 and 6 hours a day here. They're not eating hardly or whatever. They're not telling them the truth. That's what I'm thinking that I want to say about it, that they're not telling them the truth of how it is. They're not just naturally, most of them are not naturally thin. They all, I mean, otherwise, you know, magazines wouldn't sell 45 secrets to losing weight in 5 days, you know, or so forth, you know. You wouldn't see that. It's just because they're not being realistic, which brings me to dieting.
Well, can I jump in and share? I have to have a little bit of tirade about the magazines. magazines aren't portraying real bodies either. I mean, they're stretching those images. They're cutting out the waistline. They're doing such photo touch-ups that even the actress doesn't look like that. I remember an interview with Jenny McCarthy, and she cracks me up. I love her. They were looking at her centerfold picture, and she said, well, I'm not really that tall. And she took out a Sharpie, and she drew where her feet would actually be. And she goes, actually, that's
wow.
Breakout. And she drew polka dots all over her face. And she's like, and they, you know, they tucked in my waist, and so she drew where her waist would actually be. And what she was illustrating is that these magazines, that's not even what the actresses look like or the models look like. They've manipulated them.
Photoshop to the rescue.
I mean, how can the rest of us keep up with that? I mean, that's not even realistic for that person.
The dieting industry, number one industry on the planet. Everybody wants to lose
weight.
Oh, wow. Right.
Everywhere around the world.
Everyone starts these diets. They finish these diets. They go off these diets because most of them are unrealistic. I mean, some do emphasize portion control and exercise, but most are like, oh, well, if you just eat grapefruit all day, or just eat this all day, or eat that, or one food thing, or here, you know, go to this extreme and eat this, or go to this extreme and eat that. And people are, as we call it, yo-yo dieting, getting themselves into a pattern where they're never that last 5 pounds or 10 pounds or whatever, or what they call vanity pounds. It's just, it's killing them. in one sense because they don't know what they're doing. I remember Luther Vandross. Whenever I would see him during his final years, he would be big one time, extremely big. And then the next time you saw him, he would be extremely skinny. Next time, extremely big. Next time, extremely skinny. And then he wind up dying from a stroke. And I was like, well, of course. And nobody really brought in the weight factor and the dieting factor in this, that he was going up and down so much and messing with his body so much that, yeah, you know, there was a repercussion for it. They don't bring that out. They just, oh, you know, it was this high blood pressure, it was this. But they didn't look at, wait a minute, over the last so-and-so years, he's been this weight, this weight, this weight, this weight, going up and down, up and down, up and down from all these diets, and one of them wound up costing him, you know? And people don't see the real truth of why they do it. And we know statistically that people that do these diets, they wind up gaining back all the weight they've lost, plus an extra 20, you know, just to boot. How do you stop that cycle of people doing that? And instead of lifestyle changing and eating properly, doing the portion control of the exercise versus the dieting, which is die with a T.
Well, you know, I think when it comes to both dieting and a lot of things in life, okay, this isn't just with our weight, a lot of people, myself included, are looking and hoping for a magic button, okay? We want hope in a bottle. We can happen quickly, effortlessly, without a lot of work or pain on our part. And the diet industry is brilliant on leveraging this. They know this about us. And they make us promises that really we cannot keep long term. And we don't, you know, if the diet industry was honest and they said, well, you need to control your portions, you probably need to exercise for an hour a day, and this isn't going to be easy and it's going to take many months, they wouldn't sell a thing. But that's the reality of what healthy long term weight control looks like. None of us want to buy that, right? So we want to buy the quick fix. That's what a lot of people want to buy. And, you know, it's a psychological issue that I don't think we're going to overcome overnight. No one wants to hear, this is not an easy process for you to take off this weight. Imagine someone who weighs a lot, you know, a 400-pound person or like the actress you mentioned in Precious. Her battle, if she wants to lose some of her weight and be a bit healthier, so long, okay? The journey, if she were to look at it realistically, it's, you know, probably a couple of years. Who wants to be told that? Who wants to do that?
Exactly. So they go in for surgeries and get lap bands and tucks and stomach stifling and all this other fun stuff. Ha! And to try to be smaller instead of being disciplined. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they want it to happen overnight. And they also quickly that their problems will be solved, but in my experience, you need to solve your other problems before you can have successful long-term weight loss.
True. I remember Oprah. She used like the icon almost for weight loss and weight gain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I remember her battles with it, and, you know, she had the trainer, had the chef, had all that other stuff, but even she said, you know, I wasn't happy with my body image. It didn't matter what size I got to. You know, and so forth, and now she's finally at a comfortable, for her, size. But, I mean, people are still just like, oh, remember the days when she was size 8? You know, and so forth. But she looked unhealthy to me, but that's just a whole issue, different issue. But it was, but there is that pressure, you know, that you need to lose all this weight because, see, you're on TV or, you know, whatever. But when you have people that are, like we mentioned earlier, about the guy who said that these women speakers, that because they were considered overweight, that they wind up increasing their gigs after they lost weight. I think there's a pressure in just everyday stuff, too, that if you don't look a certain way, then we have a problem with you. It doesn't matter.
There's
your talent,
a financial
it doesn't
link
matter.
What you're talking about, too.
There's a who?
There's a financial link. What I'm hearing you say in the instance of the speaker is if you want to succeed in your job or career, if you're in that type of job or career, you need to lose weight and look better if you want to be in the spotlight more and get more exposure. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was funny because he didn't address it to men necessarily. He really did address it to women. But, you know, and I just thought, isn't that interesting? You know, even here in this segment where it really is supposed to be about intellect and so forth, you're telling somebody, okay, well, you do have to lose weight in order to close a deal.
Wow.
You know, I mean, there's totally a double standard between men and women for a lot of things. I mean, you think about, you know, men, you know, can get the crow's feet and the gray hair, and, you know, and they're considered distinguished. And
yeah,
women
distinguished
get,
and debonair.
And we're just old. And,
exactly.
And, you know, and I look at, you know, men have got it made because they can, I mean, their business suits, I mean, you can hide a lot under their jacket. And it doesn't really show because they've got the wide shoulders, you know, the cut lines. You know, you can be sporting quite a tummy under your business suit and it doesn't really show up. Whereas women's clothing really is designed to sort of show it all off. And so if it isn't perfectly smooth and if there's, you know, a bit of a roll in there, or as you call it, Della Muffin top, I mean, that shows in women's clothing. I mean, you just, there's nowhere to hide. So there's that whole industry of the Spanx and all of those things that really suck you in. And, you know, we think we've come so far from the age of people wearing corsets until their guts started coming out their bottom side. But I'm like, really? Have we really come that far? You know, how much different is this Spanx from wearing a corset?
Mm-hmm. And plus, I mean, age is a factor, too. I mean, one of the things, you know, I don't know how old you ladies are, but when you start to reach perimenopausal age, which is pretty much 40 and above, your body changes, and they don't tell women that. I mean, you may gain or lose, depending on which doctor you go to. but they talk about that a lot of women are not prepared for that. And so what you could lose weight, you know, maybe now, real instantly, and stuff, once you reach that age, it's not happening so quickly. You know, they don't talk to women about that. They don't talk to women about, you know, that these things can endanger your life. That it's not a, you know, that we've always talked about, you know, being overweight, that there is the problem with the health system in terms of, you know, that all these weight issues have. But they don't talk about the underweight women and their charges in the health system as well. That, you know, when you have to keep sustaining someone on food and getting them up to a healthy weight and so forth, they're not talking about the real repercussions behind also being underweight. Obesity, we know there's a problem. We know there's a problem. We know that it does need to be dealt with, but how to deal with it, we can't agree. And stuff, because some is just, oh, okay, lose the weight and then everything's fine. But they don't really talk about the mental repercussions of all that and dealing with the body image that we have to have, that discussion. And particularly for underweight women, too, that it's, there needs to be a discussion that you can't kill yourself, you know, that it's not okay that, you know, you're like this because we want you around. You have something to contribute. That really is the message that's being lost. It's not a thing about, you know, money per se. It is the thing about you can lose your life either way, in either extreme. And those messages are not getting across.
Oh, absolutely.
No, they're not.
Nobody's saying, you know, the average is beautiful. To be average is beautiful. Everybody wants to be extraordinary and different. And Dallas, I was listening to you. I was thinking about this example I saw. It was it's a TV show out of the UK, and they have called Super Fat, Super Thin. I think that's what it's called. Anyway, basically what they do is they take a really big person. No, super size and super. It's some play on the two extremes anyway. And they take an overweight woman and an anorexic woman, and they pair them up. And what they do is they counsel them on what they should be eating and help them with body image. And what they do is they make them swap diets. And so the person who is super thin has to actually eat the diet of the larger person and vice versa. And I remember this one particular woman who was profiled. She was so thin, and she was a marathon runner, and she was running these marathons, and she was, I mean, like her waist was, I mean, you could see all of her bones through her, at, you know, above her chest, like, you know, her collarbone and all of her ribs up there. She really had no fat on her at all, and yet she was trying to go for this thin, and they said, you need to gain weight. And the woman looked like she was going to burst into tears. Like, she had such a warped view of her own body. And they said, look, your body is so calorie deprived that it's turning to your muscle to burn, to keep you alive. Like, this is not healthy. And they finally got her to see, and then they came back, I think, 3 months later, and she looked gorgeous. She had gained some weight. Her face had filled out. She looked so much better, and yet she was battling this image that had her looking like a walking skeleton, because she had, in her mind, again, with what Reese said, she had this mental image that she could not see past, that what she was going towards wasn't, you know, she just had that she had to get thinner and thinner, and she was afraid. She shared that she was even afraid to gain weight, that she was afraid to eat too much, and so she became the self-control to the extreme, where she could control her appetite to the extreme. And it was shocking to watch.
I remember a couple of weeks ago, Jillian Michaels, you know, from America's Biggest Loser, was being sued. And I guess now they've moved it to a class action suit, where she was being sued by these women who claimed that, you know, she sold them these products, that they bought these products with her name on it, that promised weight loss. And I bring that up because I believe, Carla, you were the one who brought up about the magic button. And she was being sued because these women didn't lose weight after they took these pills. And, you know, and Jillian Michaels, of course, said, well, everybody knows you need to exercise and portion control and so forth. And these women came back and said, that's not what you said. You said if we take these pills, we'll lose weight.
So there's kind of a dichotomy between what she was saying and what she was selling.
Exactly.
Well,
huh.
Where is the responsibility? I mean, we know. I mean, there are weight loss pills by the gazillion on the market. People use extremes of whatever. But when do people take responsibility for being healthy? I mean, and I'm not saying being thin or anything like that, but being healthy. Because really, though, I've known people that are skinny as can be and can't walk a flight of stairs. So, I mean, that's obviously not healthy. So, but I'm saying, where is the responsibility that, you know, okay, here's your magic pill, but the magic pill is not going to work unless you do ABC. And you're not willing to do ABC, and now you want to blame me because you didn't do ABC, you just took the pill. Where is the responsibility?
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at, there's kind of two problems there. I mean, yeah, as a society, our personal accountability is fairly low. We want to blame everyone else around us for what we've done to ourselves, but then you look at the, you know, the marketing and advertising industry, and, you know, what is the first thing that they sell you? They tell you, they teach you that everybody wants to buy the magic bullet, so you need to make sure that you're selling it. And I was watching a documentary, and I remember the opening line. It was the best opening line. It said, people will do just about anything to lose weight except for eat less and exercise more. And
exactly.
The diet industry can't sell that. They can't sell that because that's something that you can just do. They have
exactly.
to use the pill.
Exactly.
And it serves their interest for you to go up and down, for you to be temporarily successful, and then have to come back for more. It's good business for them in terms of sustainability if their customers aren't successful. If their customers were successful, they would run out of customers pretty quick.
That is a very valid point, an extremely valid point. That there was, you know, the movie, Thank You for Not Smoking. I'm going to turn what he said to the weight issue, but to the dieting industry. But basically his point was smoking companies, you know, yes, we want you to smoke, but so do these organizations that are wanting to use you for a cause. They want you to keep smoking too. They can't tell you that, but they do. And the same, I think, applies to the weight loss industry. That the weight loss industry, yes, they want you to lose the weight, but then you have causes and so forth that it's in their interest if you don't lose it. So they can say, well, look, these don't work, or, you know, this and this and this. But when do you get off that cycle to, you know, really do take responsibility, to bring it down to that you have to have portion control? I was reading in a book by Dr. Christine Northrup the other day, and she was talking about portion control. And, you know, visually, I mean, when I read it, I was just like, oh, my God, nobody can eat this, you know. And she was like, you cup your hands together, and that is the amount of food that you need for a meal.
Wow.
And I was like, well, can a burger fit in that? And so forth. But I mean, her whole thing was, you know, your stomach is so small. And there was a trivia question that I had sent through on Twitter last week about where the stomach is the only instrument in the body that will expand 20 times its normal size. And I was just like, okay, we're on this thing now. But she was talking about, you know, that really we don't need that much food, but society keeps making us think we do. And that you only need to cup your hands together, and that's how much food that you need. And visually, I just could not wrap my head around that because I'm just like, oh, my God, that's small. That's like nothing, you know. Like, duh, you know, even if you have big hands, you know. It's just like, oh, you know, but. I mean, and she wasn't the first person I heard say it. Was just somebody who I'd heard recently. And it was just like, oh, that's not going to sell, you know, because people are not, I mean, just visually, I mean, how does that make you think? You know, if you just think, cupping your two hands together, that's how much you should eat per meal. What does that make you think?
Well, you know what I think is really interesting, and I think the contrast has become even greater in the last like 10 to 15 years, is the difference between the portion sizes that we are served in American restaurants and the thinner that Hollywood and our media has gotten. It's like one's going in one direction, more and more food, and meanwhile,
our
influences are thinner and thinner. And
yeah, because people want their money's worth, and they don't think if they're getting a, you know, like, remember how they used to always talk about French food and how there was nothing to it? You know, and you
right.
just see this one little piece of something in the center of the plate, you know, with a garnish or whatever. And so people want to see, and then they pay $50 for it or $30 for it. And people in America just are always talking about value. You know, we want more for our money.
Yeah, we equate value with how much we get, you know.
Yeah, we need
and
more for our money.
That's a cultural standard.
Yeah, so I mean,
how do
you're
we
not going to.
Away from that standard. You know, you can't get away from it overnight.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. I mean, everything always starts with one and starts with you. You know, that in terms of, you know, how you start to view food. Because really, that is what it comes down to, is your view of food and your food of you. You know, your view of you. You know what I mean? And versus society's view of food in you. I mean, society wants you to starve to death. Okay, we got that. So So how do you get that balance in? And wrapping it up, how do you get that balance in and making sure that you're being healthy, making sure you're not being swayed by the media who has no interest in your health, but only in helping people sell their products. You know, the diet industry has no interest in your health. They're interested in selling books and pills and, you know, surgeries and whatever. You know, how do you, where do you go from that? Where we know what the problem is, but where is a possible solution?
Well, you know, I like the direction that things are going with a new emphasis in preventative medicine, and that people are really looking at, you know, and I mean, it's hard for governments to really sometimes in a way justify this, but I mean, I think there's a lot of cases being made that we know now if we prevent illness by educating people, by putting in preventative programs, that we save on the other side. But that has been a battle that's been very, very difficult for governments to justify putting in all of these preventative programs, and now there's been enough research to support that, that I'm hoping, I mean, I know certainly we're seeing a lot more of it here in Canada, but educating people about portion control, and yes, your protein consumption should be about the size of a deck of playing cards. And for our standards, you know, where we think of this giant sort of Flintstone-esque size piece of steak, and I think of, you know, Fred Flintstone, you know, where he's
staying in the car.
Yeah, you know, we don't equate that with value, but yet if we were to look at something that had, you know, if we were at, you know, educating people about that and really educating them and putting a lot of stuff in there and support, then I think that's a good step forward where people can understand, you know, what sustainable health is, you know, why, you know, and I was listening to you and Reese talk about the portions in the U.S. Especially are quite, I mean, Canada, we do have that problem in restaurants as well, but not nearly to the extent as in the U.S. I mean, I always am shocked about how much food they give you. And what they give you to bulk up that perception of value is usually a lot of empty carb calories where, you know, they give you the big mound of pasta that it's fairly inexpensive for the restaurant to add that value. But they're not adding any really nutritional value. They're not giving you a mound of vegetables where you would be getting a lot more nutrition from it. You're getting a lot of sort of empty calories. And so I think it does need to start with education because people, you know, and maybe, I mean, it's, I think about how all of the smoking bans in public places in Canada really have done a lot of good. I mean, it's made it a lot more difficult for people to smoke. It's made smoking a lot less, you know, commonplace in public forums. You know, I'd like to think that that's really cut back on the amount of smoking, although I think teenage girls are the biggest growing segment, and that is because, you know, there is a correlation between smoking and being thinner, or I don't know, anyway. But if you were to look at some of the other things that have come into place, there's a big movement here, and I don't know if it's paralleled in the U.S., to ban junk food in vending machines in schools, to, you know, legislate that, you know, that cafeterias in schools have healthy food only. You know, none of this convenient pizza pop and garbage food because, you know, we know if you get used to a certain palate for a certain richness of food, that kind of sticks with you, and it's hard to kick that habit. You crave that. You crave the high-fat, high-sugar, high-flavor food, but if you don't ever get used to it, it's a much better thing. So I think those are some stepping stones that could start to solve the problem.
That makes sense. Let me ask you this. How do you do that with adults? That's great in school and stuff, and because you have their attention. 7 hours a day, you can pull that off. You can be able to pull it off in on a college campus. You may even be able to pull it off there. But average Sue and Joe, how do you reach them to get that message out about and educating them?
Well, you know, that's tough because, I mean, I look at my stepfather had a heart attack, and he's a smoker. He is a lover of bacon, and, you know, he was sort of all the things that you shouldn't be, you know, from a heart health perspective. And, you know, I remember visiting him in the hospital, you know, after he had his heart attack, and he kind of was like, you know, oh, I guess this means I need to, you know, quit smoking and, you know, do all these things. And the doctors gave him the, you know, here's the deal. You need to do this, 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 and this if you want to continue to live. And he was the repentant sinner. I mean, he was like, I'm going to change my ways. And he has changed some of his ways, but he still smokes. He still smokes today. And, you know, I mean, he's had the education, he's had the warnings, he had the big scare, and yet he's still gone back to that habit that got him there. So, I mean, how do you convince people, you know, you need to do this if you want to, continue living? I mean, that's a really tough, I don't have an answer to that, you know, because you look at the people who have, you know, gone right to the edge. And they've gone right to the edge, and yet they still, it's within their power to change that, and yet they don't.
So there we come down to choice. So in wrapping it up, this could, as we know, this could be a discussion for weeks, you know, on weight and society's view of it. You know, it could. It just could. Because there are so many examples that are out there, and so much is, some of it misinformation, but, you know, there's so much there to share. And I want to thank you, Carla Young, and Reese. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk today, and it has been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on Portrait of a Business today. We hope that you found our tips and advice from our guests to be helpful to you, and please do not hesitate to contact us. You can look at our site, portraitofabusiness.info, for more information.